Welcome, Crime Lighters. I am your host, Ashton Fowler.
And I'm your co-host, Brooke Finch.
And welcome to The Crime Light. We are so glad you guys are here. And today's episode was going to be a special one, but
I chickened out.
Brooke chickened out just a little bit.
I got a little nervous.
A wee bit nervous. So what we were going to do was I was going to have a story to tell Brooke, and Brooke was going to have a case or story to tell me, and we weren't going to know what case the other was doing, so it was going to be super surprising and fun, and then Brooke got cold feet. So we're just doing mine today, but in the next episode...
Well, I'll be on me, so...
It will be yikes. All Brooke.
Y'all get ready.
Brooke will have a case to tell me about that I know nothing about, which is... She says I know nothing about it, which is super interesting because I pretty much know everything, so...
Right. Oh. No, it literally took me a while to process, like, yeah.
I'm kidding. I don't know everything. I'm not that conceited, guys, I promise. So, okay.
Continue.
So, today, the case that I have prepared for you guys is the Lizzie Borden case. Now, I look at this case and... So the title that I'm titling today's podcast is Lizzie Borden, Bored in the House, and I'm in the House Bored with an X.
Because Borden.
Borden is their last name. Bored in the House, and I'm in the House. I felt pretty creative with
it. It's, bro. I didn't even realize it. I'm dumb enough to not even catch it. So
this case is super. I feel like not a lot of people know about the in and outs of this case. I'm sure you've heard of it. There's a little old nursery rhyme that's pretty creepy that goes, Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41. So that's a nursery rhyme that children used to, like, sing to one another.
Word.
Just, like, on the low.
That's lit.
Like, I just thought that was super good. Like, it's kind of like Ring Around the Rosie, where it's like...
Yeah.
Well, actually, no. Ring Around the Rosie is kind of, like, hidden. This is just straight up, she murdered her parents. So...
I think the only reason I've heard that before is because I think I, like, heard about the story in history. It was my junior year.
Yeah. In U.S. history.
And Miss Farley.
Yes.
Oh, I hated her. I hope she hears that, too.
So probably in U.S. history, that's where I started to hear about it first, too.
I'm almost positive you were in my class.
I don't think so.
No, I promise.
We can talk about this later. Okay, I really don't think I was. So I'm going to go ahead and get into the case, Lizzie Borden, Bored in the House, and I'm in the House Bored with an axe. The people involved, okay, we're gonna kind of set the scene here. These are the people involved. These are our main characters, the main suspects. This is kind of like Clue, whodunit kind of thing.
Word.
You know? Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be, you know, Lizzie in the parlor with an axe.
Okay.
You know, that kind of thing. I'm not saying that's who did it, but that's the kind of feel we've got here. So here are the people involved. Okay, so we've got Andrew Borden. This is the father. This is Lizzie's father. He's a very rich man of the house. Next, we have Abby Borden. Now, this is not Lizzie's, birth mother. This is her stepmom.
Okay.
And then you have Lizzie herself. She's kind of it kind of revolves around her.
Is her real name Elizabeth?
Yes.
Okay, word.
Then you've got Bridget, aka Maggie Sullivan. She's the Irish live-in maid. I think that's a little Scottish, if I'm being honest.
that's
a little Scottish.
That took me by surprise.
Sorry to all the Irish people listening to this.
Because guess what? We have fan base all over the world.
We do. We'll talk about that towards the end, but we do. So. So I can do an Irish accent, but, you know, whatever. So, this is, she's the Irish live-in maid for the Bordens. Her name is Bridget. They call her Maggie. So then we have this man named John Morse. This is Andrew's late wife's brother. So this is Lizzie's uncle. Okay. So I know that's kind of confusing. So Andrew, his brother-in-law, which is also Lizzie's uncle. So it's his dead wife's brother. And then we have Emma Borden, and that is Lizzie's older sister. She's about 10 years older than she is.
Damn.
Yeah. Okay, so now I'm gonna kind of set, like, the... give you, like, the setting for the characters, okay? Just give you a little bit of their backstory, how this all started. So Sarah Morse Borden, that is Lizzie and Emma's mother, she dies in 1863 and Lizzie is 3 years old. So their father remarries a woman named Abby 3 years later and they are married throughout the rest of the story. Andrew was a very successful, like, really successful person. He was extremely wealthy, he was a property developer, and he did a ton of other things with, like, banks and, like, buildings and, like, all this stuff. Like, he was just super important and very successful and wealthy. Mm-hmm. Although they were super wealthy and had all this money, they lived very frugally. Like, that's how he grew up. He didn't have a lot, so when he came into all this money and all this success, he and his family lived like he did when he was a kid. So they lived on a very affluent side of town. This is in Massachusetts.
Okay.
They lived in a very affluent side of town. And this is, they called it like the numbered streets. So like if you lived on the numbered streets, you like, you made it. And all these houses, they had electricity, they had plumbing, but they didn't have any of that. Like, at this point in the 1890s, that was, like, super, like, coming into that age. Mm-hmm. It was normal for you to have plumbing and electricity in your home. They didn't have any of that. And that was on Andrew's choice. Like, he just chose not to have that in his house. Which I thought, you know, super weird.
Go off, I guess.
And, like, Lizzie and Emma grew up where they didn't, like, have a whole lot.
They had what they needed.
And that was it, the necessities, and that was it. And they went to school, they went to church, and that was it. That was all they did. They did chores at the house, they didn't really have friends, they didn't really have extravagant dresses, like, they could have, like, that was their lifestyle. So, Lizzie was actually known for shoplifting as a kid, but she didn't get in trouble for it, because, you know, the shopkeepers, it wasn't like she was slick about it either, like, they would notice, and they'd be like, ah, Lizzie... And they just, like, put it on her father's tab and, like, her dad would, you know, pay for it later. That kind of thing. Because they just knew, oh, her dad's super rich, whatever. We'll just, you know, we'll just...
We'll let her think she's getting away with it, but...
Oh, that Lizzie, man. That Lizzie.
What a queen.
Oh, what a gal.
Why the Irish? Why again? For what?
Oh, what a gal.
Ew!
I think I'm pretty good at it. I'll do it more throughout this episode because I have to do Bridget's voice. So anyways.
Okay.
So Emma and Lizzie were actually Sunday school teachers and they were involved in a ton of Christian organizations. Like Lizzie herself was involved in like a lot of female oriented Christian organizations. Like that was what she was involved in. And she was a Sunday school teacher. So that's just to account to her upbringing. That's just what they were known for.
Okay.
So talking about, you know, when I mentioned Abby, the stepmom, mm-hmm. She had been in Lizzie's life since she was 3 years old, right? Mm-hmm. But they had a very watered down kind of cold relationship.
Like the typical kind of stepmom daughter relationship or?
Depends on what you call typical. I don't know.
But, like, no, like, I don't mean typical.
Like, you're not
my
mom?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
So they didn't really get along at all. Mm-hmm. And she didn't call her mom or Abby. She called her Mrs. Borden. Isn't that weird? That's just, it was just so formal. It was kind of like a business interaction. It was just like, this is formal and this is the extent of what it goes to and that's it. So she believed that she had only married her father for his money. Like, she thought Abby was a gold digger, and that was it. And Lizzie and Emma rarely ate with Andrew and Abby. Like, they just didn't have a good relationship at all.
They didn't even eat with them?
No, and they're living at this point, so at the time of the murders, Emma is in her 40s, and Lizzie is in her 30s. So, they're unwed, they're living at home, because if you, at that point in time, if you were a woman and you weren't married and you were moving out, oh my gosh, heaven forbid. Like, that was not socially acceptable. That was not a thing. Like, you did not leave your family's house until you were married. Otherwise, you were dependent on your father and worked around the house. So they couldn't leave.
Yeah.
So that is, you know.
Wow, what a time to be alive.
But, like, if your dad's loaded, where's the rush in getting married anyways? Because that was kind of the thing, was, like, getting married was a point of, like, sustainability for women.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was, like, a huge step, too. But it was almost, like, the goal.
Yeah.
Like...
Oh, well, that was a woman's purpose.
Bro, you got married. Oh, congratulations!
You got married! Oh, you finally did it.
Now you go finally reached your peak in life.
Now go pop out 8 kids and die at 46. That's it.
What a
That's
life.
It. That's it. But for them, it's like, you know, where's the rush in getting married if your dad's super loaded? Mm-hmm. What's the point in having a goal to marry rich if you're going to get a ton of cash when he dies anyways?
Period.
You know, so I don't think...
We love gold diggers.
I don't think there was any rush on their part to, like, leave, you know? They had their organizations, they had their church life, they had their home life, they had a room, they had, like, what more could you want? Like, a man to tell you what to do? Okay, sure. So that is kind of the background to this whole case.
Okay.
Now I'm going to dive into the events leading up to the murder. Because there are a few that create some tension, if there wasn't some already, that leads
yeah,
to...
Yeah, I feel like they've been living in tension for 30 years.
Yeah, for at least 30 years.
Word.
So like we said, there's already a ton of tension between, you know, Andrew and Abby on one side, and then Lizzie and Emma on another side, where it's just, like, this constant bashing of heads, where it just clashes and isn't, you know, it's just cold tension. So we're gonna go to May 1892. Andrew goes and kills some pigeons in a barn because he believes they're, like, attracting local kids to come out and try to hunt them. And he's just like, screw it. Like, I'm just going to kill them all.
I'm just going to kill them all so nobody else can?
Yeah.
Word.
He's just like, I don't want kids on my property anymore. I'm just going to kill them all.
These damn kids.
So, Lizzie had recently built, like, a little coop for them, and she cared for those pigeons, and they were kind of like her pets, and she had, like, raised them kind of thing.
Gag.
And then her dad killed them all. So, she was super angry with her dad. So she was just like, bro, I...
Who's the real murderer? Nance is a pigeon serial killer?
Okay, maybe Lizzie killed her dad and maybe Abby, but he killed like 12 pigeons. Who's the real murderer?
Completely valid.
Complete validity in that. Oh my gosh. So yeah, so she constantly reminded her dad. Even after this, so the murders happened in August 1892. This is May, 4 months. Lizzie was like, hey, remember when you killed all my pigeons?
Yeah, I do. I have nightmares about it every night.
I haven't forgotten. I really haven't. So they just, you know, she'd be passing, she's getting her plate for dinner, you know, and
dang, she's talking really to wish Bridget. I had my pet pigeons right now.
Hey, Dad, remember... just a couple months ago, it's kind of escaping me. Do you remember when you killed all my pigeons? Wow, you don't? Well, I do. I remember. Yeah, I still haven't forgotten, and I'm not gonna forgive you.
What if she, like, kept their dead bodies?
Oh my gosh. That's another. I don't know, Brooke, what if?
Like, I mean, just, like, imagine, like, her, like, bringing up, and then every single time she goes back upstairs, she's, like, stroking them. She's like, it's okay.
Tell me you've seen Dumb and Dumber.
No.
Oh my gosh. For those of you who have seen Dumb and Dumber, if you remember the scene where they cut off the bird's head.
And they keep running?
No. This is so chaotic. And he sells the bird to a blind kid. He just tapes the head back on. He's like, Lloyd, Petey didn't have a head. And he's like, Harry, I took care of it, and it cuts to the blind kid with the bird with, like, duct taped head back on. He's like, pretty bird.
That's pretty so bird. Weird.
That's what that reminded me of. That's a long tangent, and we went completely off topic.
But it's okay.
If you've seen Dumb and Dumber, that's what that reminded me of. Okay. So, yeah, so just she just constantly reminded her dad. Like, yeah, remember when you killed my pigeons?
Let it go, Lizzie.
I'm still mad at you for that. So, another thing that happened right before the murders was tension started to grow between them, like everyone, literally everyone in this house. But in particular, Abby and the girls. So, like I said, Andrew was a property dealer, like a property holder. He was rich. He had a ton of money, a ton of real estate, all this stuff. So he gives some real estate to some distant relatives in Abby's family.
I hate the name Abby. Can I just say, let the record show.
Sorry to all the Abbys.
Sorry to Abby Bolly too. I'm sorry.
Sorry to all the Abbys listening to our podcast.
I just really... But I hate my name too. Anyway, sorry, continue.
Well, all right. So they were super mad at Andrew because he gave away a ton of real estate to distant relatives in Abby's family.
For what?
No reason. He nothing. He lost real estate and drove a stake between him and his daughters. Like, it's super weird.
Good going, Andrew.
And it was...
I hate that name too.
We just hate all the names in this.
That started with an A.
Oh, well, screw me, I guess. So, these girls were super... Lizzie and Emma were super mad because they were like, we are more entitled to this real estate than Abby's distant relatives? She's like, they were like, she's not even our biological mom, and you're giving, like, her second cousins a house?
Make it make sense.
That's exactly what they
I'd
said.
Be pressed.
They were super mad. And so they came to him and they're like, you're lying, right? You're kidding.
Say psych.
Say psych right now. Give me a house. You're lying. Say psych. So he looks at them and he's like, okay, I'll give you a house. What do you want? He's like, your pick of the properties. What do you want? And they choose the house that they lived in before their mother died. So they lived in this house with their mom. So remember, Emma is considerably older than Lizzie is. Mm-hmm. So Emma remembers this house more, but they were like, we want that house. We want to live in that house. Mm-hmm. So the dad gives them the house. What's weird about this transaction is not even a couple days later, the girls sell it to their dad. So it's in their name now, but they're like, hey, so actually we want the cash instead. And they sell it to their dad for, back then, it was $5,000, but that's 1892 money. So now, with inflation, in our time, that is $142,000.
Word.
So, you know, it's weird to me because they were like, we want the sentimental house, the one that we grew up in before mom died. And they're like, yeah, forget that. Can I have the cash, please? And then they cash out.
Run me my money.
Run me my money. So it's super weird because even after this transaction, there was still friction between Lizzie and Abby. So, like, the dad tried to remedy it and be like, you know what? You're right. I'm giving away houses to distant members that you haven't even met yet. I'll give you guys something. And they're like, well, thank you for noticing. Like, thank you. I really appreciate it.
I mean, I brought...
What? She thought she saw something.
No, I thought I felt something. Stop.
Oh, my God. Stop!
Okay, the whole... Okay, anyways, let's continue, please. So basically... Oh, we're not redoing it! No!
Alright, welcome back. Hi again. Brooke thought she saw something, and...
No, I thought I felt something hit the back of my car, like two hands.
So we drove away and screamed, so we are very sorry if,
but we're in too deep, so.
Yeah, we're not starting over. This is, it's just, it's raw. It's raw.
Real. It's real. It's cover girl.
It's relatable. It is. And maybe it's Maybelline.
Shut up.
So we're going to pick up right back where we left off. So we just talked about, I don't even know how to recover from this, you guys, but we're going to try to. I'm really freaked out. So we just talked about them selling their house.
Okay, yeah.
Back to their dad. So I was talking about how there's friction between Lizzie and Emma and Abby. And even though there was tension there before, it gets worse. It was never warm to begin with, but it gets worse.
Okay.
So, the next thing that happens this summer, it's a series of unfortunate events that summer for them. So that summer, the same summer as the murders, the Borden home was robbed in broad daylight. So.
Wow.
I know. So the only thing, I say robbed kind of lightly, because the only thing that was taken from the home is $50 and some of Abby's jewelry. And that's it. So.
That's kind of sus.
Yeah, nothing else. Isn't that just a little suspicious? Like it seems as if the robber were someone who knew exactly where to look and only wanted to steal from Abby.
It's like, you know, like robbers that steal doors?
I don't know what you're talking about.
continue.
Okay, cool. So Andrew ends up calling off the investigation, like, as a whole, which is strange. Right,
because I think that's kind of valid. Like, okay, they only stole $50 and some jewelry. Was the daughter pressed?
The daughter? Lizzie?
I mean, the wife. Abby.
No. Well, I mean, yeah. So, she's upset, obviously, because, you know, some of her jewelry is gone. $50 is gone. But at that point, I would feel like if someone broke into my house at broad daylight and took something to begin with, would that not lead to more robberies?
Yeah, I guess. Like pretty ballsy.
Yeah, right? Exactly. In broad daylight, only taking a little bit, maybe it's a show of power. Like, you don't know what could come of that.
Do it just because you can.
Yeah, exactly. you don't know what's going on. You don't know their motive. You don't know what they're going to do next.
Okay.
But Andrew calls off the investigation altogether, which I would want to know who's threatening my family and taking things from me, right? Like, I feel like... So, and it's not like they've been at it for months. They're there for a couple of days trying to figure things out. And he's like, nah, never mind. You're good.
That's...
So...
Okay, go off, I guess.
I know, like, why wouldn't you want to find out who did it and get your stuff back? Like, unless you knew who did it and you were able to handle the situation internally. What I'm saying is maybe it was someone in the house... Who allegedly...
The daughters.
Yes. Who allegedly broke in, quote-unquote, and stole things from Abby. Because if you're a robber, why target one person and not take things from other people, too? It was $50 as a whole, and then only stuff from Abby.
Period.
So, it makes me think that someone has a predisposed dislike towards Abby.
Period.
So then...
I think that's literally the only logical explanation.
I do too. Like, it's just super weird. So, someone in the house, Lizzie, took stuff from Emma, from Abby. Sorry, I coughed there. So, the lights just went off in her garage. We're a little...
Oh my gosh.
Okay, so, after this incident, Andrew locks all the doors. Anytime they go somewhere, he's locking all the doors, you know.
So, you should have done in the first place.
Well, yeah, but it's 1892. You know, the serial killers aren't really a
thing yet. Trust nobody.
I've been saying that from the beginning. Don't trust people around you, right?
Can't trust no hoe.
However, he starts locking all their doors. He starts locking, you know, safes. He starts locking the rooms to the parlor when they're not in there. It's like they're home, but he locks the door to the parlor when they're not in there.
I still think that whole term is just so great.
What?
The parlor.
Oh, the parlor?
Yeah.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
So rich people
so
wear.
Classy. Ugh.
Like, anyway, observatory? Ugh.
We had one in our sorority house. A little rip.
Rip that.
Continue.
Man. Oh my gosh.
Continue.
So after this, he gets a master key.
Okay.
And he has this master key where he's locking all the doors. And it is said by people who knew him that they think it was kind of like, hey, to the people in the house, hey, I know who did this. You can't do it again. Kind of like a power move, just like, I know someone in this house did it.
I'm not going to say nothing, but if you do it again, you're going to get checked.
Exactly.
Period.
And he had the key.
Go off, Andrew.
Exactly. Go completely off, Andrew. Go completely off. He just had this key where he was just, it would just hang on his belt. And he just, oh, you want to get into the observatory? Oh, yeah, let me just master key that real quick.
He had that hoe unlocked.
Oh, he did.
Literally
unlocked. Like, that's just how he went after that. And so, no more incidents of robbery happened to the Bordens after that. At all. Well, I mean, they die soon after, but at that point, you know, like, no one, this was probably 2 months before anything happened.
Okay.
So, in those 2 months, no one tried to rob them again. Meaning, either it was a really stupid robber, or it was someone in the house who got the message.
Or it was both.
Or both. So, it was a stupid robber who lives in the house. So, alright, here's another little incident that happens before the murders. In the, like, the few days right before the murders, the entire household becomes violently ill. Like, violently ill. Abby said she thought their bread had been poisoned, and Lizzie told a friend that she thought her father had these powerful enemies that were poisoning their milk. And she was like,
sounds like celiac to me.
Brooke's a little bitter. She was telling her friend that, like, she's like, they're poisoning our milk, and, like, I don't know what they're gonna do next. Like, they might burn our house down or something. And, like, I'm literally losing sleep because I don't know what they're gonna do, and, like, I'm just so scared. Which, to me, sounds like she's setting up kind of like an alibi for herself, you know? Like, setting up predisposed blame on other,
like,
people.
Like, oh, like, whoever is going to kill them harmed me first.
Yes, or if those things happened, if they were poisoned, if their house ended up being burned down, they could go to Lizzie and talk to her about it, and then they could go and talk to that friend, yeah. And that friend would say, yeah, Lizzie was telling me that these people...
Shout out to Lily.
Lizzie was telling me that these people are potentially going to burn her house down, so I don't know, maybe she should look into her father's enemies. When in reality, it was Lizzie that did it. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, she was kind of setting other people up for things that she might have done. That's what it sounded like to me. I don't know about anyone else, but...
No, that's the only logical explanation. I feel like this is just screaming the daughters.
Well, we haven't gotten to the theories yet. There are okay, a couple word. that'll blow your mind a little bit. So, the Bordens had a visitor right before and during when they were ill. And his name is John Morse. This is Lizzie and Emma's uncle. So okay. This is their biological mother's brother, or Andrew's brother-in-law.
Okay.
So he was there to discuss business matters with Andrew. And allegedly, according to sources, this was probably property business. Like, talking about dealing out some real estate or something. Because, you know... He's giving all this stuff away to Abby's family, who's not, you know, he would have been connected with, her name was Sarah, their real mom's name was Sarah. He would have been way more connected with Sarah's family than he was with Abby's, you'd think. You know, the mother of his children, they'd probably been, you know, there was probably a courtship and a relationship, and they probably had some time before they had kids. Like, there's probably a connection there between Andrew and Sarah's family, but there's nothing. No contact, no giving of real estate, no nothing. And so, finally, John reaches out to him, and John is in town, staying at the Borden home, talking to Andrew about business, and that is most likely property, estate, yeah. Real estate business.
Yeah.
Which, it's probably already a tense situation, because you're looking at it, and he's already given Abby's family, like, all the stuff. And it's not even, like,
and her... he was remarried within 3 years. Like...
Yeah.
I mean, like, no shade or nothing, because I ain't even been married once. But, like, it just, like... I don't know. Anyways, I don't like Abby.
Yeah. I mean, maybe motives were, like, I need a mother for my children. Or something like that. Yeah. You know, whatever. But the
Basher
problem...
Basher backfired.
The problem for Andrew and John was... He had given Abby's relatives, and now these aren't relatives like Abby's brother or Abby's, like, sister or her mother. It was her distant relatives. It was like Abby's second cousin three times removed kind of thing got a house, and no one in Sarah's family did. No one in Sarah's family got anything.
Don't like that.
Exactly. So obviously, probably, John didn't either. So John coming to stay with them and doing this business with Andrew was probably a tense situation where there was a little bit of resentment and anger towards him. So I feel like, given the recent events, it would be tense and, resentful. Another thing to note is John didn't seem to be sick like everyone else. So keep in mind, he was there around the same time everyone was violently ill, like throwing up, like couldn't stand, fainting spells, all this stuff. It looked like poison, but John wasn't sick at all. So that's a little eyebrow raising, like a little sus, like this man got access to like some arsenic or like some ethanol.
The
like,
hell you putting in my my food?
And my bread and milk. Like,
it's gluten. But anyways.
So whatever it was, if it was a virus, a poison, whatever, it was probably either happening before he got there or it was happening because of him.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so now I'm going to kind of give you like a layout of the home. So you have an idea. So that was the events that was the prior events that were leading up to the murder. Now I'm going to give you a layout of the house so that when I talk about the rooms, you have an idea of what that looks like. So everyone go ahead and close your eyes with me, okay? All right, imagine you're at this. Are your eyes closed?
Yeah.
All right, are your eyes closed, listener? Okay, no. Great. So we'll make a little imagination station here. Close your eyes with me. Okay, so you're looking at this house, right? Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful white colonial house. You look up and it's three stories. All right, it's got a wraparound porch, beautiful. Three stories, yes.
Including the basement, or?
No, there's a third story at the top.
Okay, weird.
You walk in the front door. To your left is going to be a parlor.
I knew it.
Yes, it is going to be a parlor. And then on, like, straight ahead is going to be, like, the little front entry. And to your right is going to be a staircase. Now, that staircase leads up to the second floor. If you're in the front entry and you go straight ahead, you'll be in the sitting room. Now, the sitting room is going to be important. So there is a door that leads to the dining room from the sitting room and also to the kitchen. So that sitting room is kind of central to everything. If you go up the stairs, you are going to walk around. It kind of like turns to the left. So when you're walking up the stairs, they'll kind of curve to your left. Now you're facing leftwards, kind of left that way. If you look straight ahead, that is going to be the guest room.
Says that way when everyone's eyes
are closed. Sorry. If you look straight ahead from the staircase, that is going to be...
You're closing your eyes too!
I'm visualizing it.
Okay.
I'm so sorry. If you look straight ahead from the staircase, you are from the left, now you're facing straight, that is the guest room. If you look to your right, that is Lizzie's bedroom.
Okay.
Lizzie's bedroom is the only room where you can access any other room. So there's no hallways or anything. You have to go through Lizzie's room to get to Emma's bedroom, to get to Andrew and Abby's bedroom.
I would hate that.
Yeah, it's super weird. And then if you go through Andrew and Abby's bedroom, there's a second staircase that leads up to the third floor, and that is where Bridget or Maggie's bedroom is. She's the maid. Okay, so we have an idea of what that looks like. You can open your eyes now, by the way. Okay, so we are now going to get into the actual timeline and events of what happened that morning, that fateful morning of August 4th, 1892. So it's breakfast time. All the members of the household are accounted for and present. Andrew, Abby, Lizzie, Emma, Bridget, the maid, and Uncle John. Uncle John ends up leaving the home to run errands in the market around 8:48 a.m. Isn't that so specific? Like 8:48? Like, how are you going to keep track of that in the 1800s? Like, what? Anyways.
They only have the hand clocks.
They ain't got no digital stuff. Like, are they going to know? Are they going to sit there real close? They count for everything? So, the time we have is 8:48 a.m. And he plans to be home around noon. Andrew, the father, leaves the house around 9 as well for his morning walk. This is a ritual for him. It's a 9 a.m. morning walk. Now, Abby goes upstairs to clean the guest room between 9 and 10:30 a.m. And this was normally a thing that Emma and Lizzie did. This was their job. They were to clean the guest room. Mm-hmm. However, Abby just took it upon herself, unfortunately, to go clean the guest room. And this was between 9 and 10:30 a.m. And John had slept in there the night before. That's why she was cleaning it. So around this time, this is when the first attack takes place. Abby is facing her killer when she is struck the first time, and she is struck on the side of the head. Now, the weapon that is used, ladies and gentlemen, is an axe.
That's horrid.
So, yeah, absolutely horrid.
Absolutely bloody horrid.
Bloody horrid, mate. So, this is no small, like...
Oops, accidentally hit her.
Yeah, it's not like that at all. Like, this is heavy damage. Like...
I wouldn't even use an axe if I was a serial killer.
I'm scared to ask you what she would use.
Okay, continue, continue.
Okay. So, she is struck on the side of the head with an axe. This, in turn, you know, this her body reacts by spinning and landing face down. So now her back is exposed to the killer, and the killer strikes her in the back 17 times with an axe. That is brutal.
Sorry, I'm laughing.
We want to apologize for Brooke laughing, first of all. This is not funny.
I'm sorry. I'm trying not to laugh.
Brooke does this when she's nervous and doesn't know what else to do. So if you take this as offensive, we're sorry. But this is literally her genuine reaction and can't do anything about it.
1,000%.
Y'all know the Joker? You know his disorder where he just laughs in those like spaces? Have you seen the Joker?
No.
Okay, well, he laughs.
But I am Harley Quinn. That's all, period.
No, he has an actual disorder that's real where he laughs in hard times.
Is that an actual thing?
Yes, it's an actual thing. I've looked it up. Right now, yeah. I think that's what you have. So, excuse her, she has the disorder that Joker has.
It's probably. Mental illness,
it's
ain't
it? It's mental illness, love. It's actually mental illness. So, I'm gonna continue, and I'm not gonna laugh because I, you know, I can handle it.
Okay, go off.
Okay. I literally think that you might.
Oh, 1,000%. Anyways, continue.
Anyways, I'm going to
continue. Bad about myself.
I'm not making you feel bad about yourself. You just have the thing that the Joker has. If that's what you people want to visualize, because we're not being offensive. We're not looking at this as like, wow, it's really funny to get murdered. Like, you literally have it, bro. You literally have it. That's literally a thing that you have.
So, no, keep talking.
Okay. Continuing on with the timeline, Andrew arrives home around 10:30 a.m. and his master key that he was so proud of to begin with, isn't working in this door. So he's knocking on the door for someone to let him in, like, hello, hello.
Open the frick up.
So Bridget, like, runs downstairs. She's been cleaning windows upstairs. She runs downstairs and sees that he's, like, banging on the door. And she tries to unlock it, and it won't unlock. And so she's, like, she says, like, an expletive. So she's, like, shite. And then she hears someone laugh from upstairs.
No, that's scary!
Yeah, exactly. So what's weird is... anyone who was halfway up the stairs would have seen Abby's dead body. So you get halfway, remember when I told you to visualize it? You're halfway up the stairs, and when you look to your left, like, you end up facing the left way when you go up the stairs. It turns left, so that would be
Abby's
straight.
Room.
That's the guest room. So when you're looking at the guest room halfway up to your left, you would have seen her dead body. Mm-hmm. So first of all, how Bridget doesn't see the dead body. Either she's really focused on coming downstairs because she's like, geez, someone's banging on the door really hard to get in.
Father!
Yeah. Sorry, Andrew. Like, that kind of thing.
Sorry,
like,
daddy!
Running downstairs.
Not like that.
Bridget's the maid, not the daughter.
Oh. Okay.
So, she's either, like, really focused on, like, getting downstairs to open the door for him, or, you know, the latter of the two options is that she was all-knowing of what was in the guest room, but didn't do anything about it. So yeah, so she says an expletive, she's like, oh shite, open up. And she can't open the door. She hears someone laugh because she cussed, and she identifies it as Lizzie.
Mm. Mm.
A little damning, isn't it? Just a little. So she identifies this laugh as Lizzie, but she can't see her. But she knows the laughter is coming from the top of the stairs, where you can't see it.
Okay.
So, she knows it's Lizzie, she knows it's from upstairs, and she can't see her, But like I said, Abby's already dead, and anyone who's halfway up the stairs would be able to see Abby, which means if Lizzie is upstairs, she can see Abby's dead body.
She's laughing at the dead body.
Well, she's laughing at her. She's laughing at her cussing.
I know, but like,
she's like, oh, it's so funny to like say a cuss word at the door. She's like, oh, you silly Irish woman, like cussing at the door. That's so funny, and laughed about it. First of all, if she did commit the murders, I don't know if I'd be able to laugh in such a short span of time after cutting someone up 18 times.
I would.
Okay, well,
straight up.
So Lizzie, of course, denies this allegation of being upstairs and says that she relayed to her father earlier that Abby was visiting a sick friend. Like, she had gotten a note that was like, come visit me, I'm sick. And Abby was like, yeah, of course, and like went to go visit her, and that's where she was. Okay. That's where Lizzie thought she was. So she then says that she helped him take off his boots and put on some slippers, and then helped him to the sofa so that he could take a nap. Now, I'm going to show you...
me.
Yes. Viewers, if you want to go to... literally, just Google Lizzie Borden and look up the crime scene photos. Is he wearing slippers? Or are those boots?
They look like boots to me.
Those are boots.
They're definitely not slippers.
They're definitely not slippers.
They don't look like typical boots.
Exactly. So, what's weird about her saying is she took off, helped him take off his boots, put on slippers, and moved him to the sofa, is that in the crime scene photos, Manz is wearing boots. Like, they're laced up.
What'd she do, change his shoes again?
Yeah, like...
make it make sense!
Like, I don't know. So, in the crime scene photos, he's wearing boots. He's dead, he's wearing boots. No one else changed them, so... is homegirl caught in a lie? Like, what?
She caught slipping.
So, Lizzie ends up telling Bridget to go to the store. So, at this point, no one else has seen that Abby's dead, and Mr. Borden is not dead yet. Andrew's not dead yet.
Okay.
So, Lizzie's like, Bridget, like, why don't you, like, go to the store and, like, get me, like, some groceries? And Bridget's like, yeah, okay, like, totally. And then she's
why
like,
is
actually...
it valid-
I don't know, I'm okay. Just, you know, okay, I don't know how to do a Boston, Massachusetts accent.
Go ahead,
so we're
go
just gonna,
off.
You're just gonna go, do the continue. Opposite end of the United States and do Valley Girl. Okay. So she's like, I would totally love to do that. Like, I totally would. So she's about to, and then she's like, actually, like, I'm really not feeling good. Like, I'm not feeling well at all. And so she goes up to her bedroom and lays down in her third story bedroom. So yeah. She's taking a nap, trying to rest, feel better. So, around 11:10 a.m., Bridget says she heard Lizzie scream, Maggie, come quick, father's dead, someone came in and killed him. So, Bridget runs down the stairs. Again, her name is Bridget, but they call her Maggie, and I've heard somewhere that Maggie was, like, a derogatory term.
Ooh.
That was, like, for maid or something like that. But, yeah, it's kind of rude, but that's what they called her. But
I go like, off, I guess.
I like giving her respect and calling her Bridget.
Okay,
so we're not going to call her Maggie. We're going to call her Bridget. Bridget deserves some respect.
Put some respect on her name.
It is not 1892 anymore. It is 2020. Bridget deserves some respect. So Andrew had been struck with an axe 10 to 11 times, and he had been struck... like, he was just facing his killer. He was actually asleep when he was murdered.
Uh-huh.
So, he was, like chest up. He had been smashed in that way. So, he'd been, like, hit on the side of the head, and one of his eyeballs was split clean in two. Which, to coroners, meant that he was probably asleep when he was attacked. Like, his eye was closed.
Mm-hmm.
So, eyeball is split clean in half, so it was around his skull. And then he is struck 10 more times. And he dies around 11 a.m. And when Lizzie was like, Bridget, come quick! When she saw and when police saw, the wounds were very, like, they looked
fresh.
Recent. Yeah. Okay. So that is the series of actual events. That is the morning of the murder. Those are the murders. So let's get into the investigation and kind of the evidence. So, you know, they end up, of course, obviously, calling the police. So... they call the police, and Lizzie is super contradictory in her statements to the police. First, she's like, yeah, I heard, like, I was outside, and, like, I heard, like, a groan, and then, like, something that was, like, someone was in pain, so I went inside. And not 2 hours later, she was like, I really didn't, like, hear anything. I went in and I had no idea something was going on. So those are two completely opposite.
Get your story straight.
Yeah, she's talking to the same police force.
She's stupid.
Exactly. She's talking to the same police force and is telling two completely different stories. She also says she remembers Abby receiving a note to go visit a sick friend. Like I said, like, I'm set, come visit. And Abby was like, yeah, of course. But, like, she's upstairs. Like, I don't, it's super weird. And then she says she remembers, like, I remember, like, Abby, like, coming home. And I was like, someone should, like, totally go check on her. So, she tells someone to go check on her. And Bridget goes to go check on her. And she says she found her dead. So, in reality, you hear her be like, yo, someone's killed dad, and Bridget comes down to see that the father's killed, and then she also says, I think, you know, Mrs. Borden's home, and, you know, goes and tells Bridget to go find her, too. Like, it's just super weird and super contradictory, and,
I feel like that's a mind game, like, hey, I want you to find both of their dead bodies, go ahead.
But I don't even know, like, how would you, like, how that timeline adds up.
Oh, like, it doesn't.
Exactly. So how can she, like, have seen a dead body, you know, smashed in 11 times with an axe and then be like, hey, I think Mrs. Borden's home. Will you go check? And she's just like, calm and collected. Oh, yeah, I'll go check. And then goes and finds Abby's dead body. Like, that doesn't make sense. That timeline doesn't make sense to me. I don't know. It's interesting. So Bridget said that she was halfway up the stairs when she saw Abby lying face down and dead. So these stories are just super, super strange. Officers said they suspected Lizzie and did not like her quote-unquote attitude. They did not like her attitude.
Okay.
They're like, she was super calm and put together despite the fact that her father and her stepmother had been hacked to death while she was home. Like, how do you act like that after that kind of situation? So they were just like, I don't like you. Like, I don't like you. And they were like, I think she did it. I really do. I really
that
do.
That sounds a little wee bit biased, but go off.
Honestly, I mean, it's 1892. I don't expect the police force to be that good. And it gets worse.
Oh, they weren't even good.
It gets worse. It gets worse. Yes. It gets worse. So despite all of this, despite them being like, you know what? I actually don't like her, mate. I actually don't like her. I hate her, no. They didn't check her clothes for bloodstains. They didn't check her clothes for anything. They did a cursory search of her room.
Okay.
And then she was like, you know what, bruv, actually, I'm feeling quite lightheaded. I'm not feeling quite well. Mm-hmm. I think I need to lie down in my bed. And they're like, oh, my bad, mate. Proper. You're proper there. Just go lay down. And they don't check anything else. They're barely in the door. They look around and she's like, actually, I think I need to lie down. And they're like, oh, right, my bad. My bad, mate. My bad. And just don't search her room ever again. That's it. They just, basically, the police force came in, talked to Lizzie, and like, yeah, I proper hate her, yeah? Came in and looked at the bodies and like, oh yeah, that man's dead, yeah? And that's it. They didn't do any more investigation. They didn't do any more, like, it's super weird.
Clearly the brightest of the bunch.
It's so bad. So, they did, however, go in the basement. So, they're like, you know what? Let's go in the basement. Let's check it out.
So, there is a basement.
There is a basement, but it doesn't count as the third floor.
Okay, word.
So, they go in the basement, and they find two hatchets, two axes, and a hatchet with a broken handle. So, the broken one had obviously been altered. So, it looked like someone had deliberately put ash and, like, dust on it to make it look like it hadn't been used in a while. Mm-hmm. But they didn't remove it, and they didn't do any further investigation. They just looked at it like, all right, this is proper strange, mate. Look, someone deliberately done that, huh? Weird. And put it down and never did anything with it again. Strange. Just, you know, 1892 police force. Like, I just, it's kind of like California in the 1970s. How it was just terrible. Yeah, just like that. You haven't listened to our previous episodes. Listen to those and you'll find out why we don't like the California Police Department in the 1970s. They were pretty terrible. So, the family's milk and Andrew and Abby's stomachs were tested for poison. But get this, no poison was found. So they hadn't been poisoned. It was probably a virus, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or it was an untraceable poison. There are a couple of untraceable poisons out there. And especially for 1892, like...
They don't have the technology to do all
exactly,
that.
Exactly. They don't have the technology that we do today to be able to figure all that stuff out. So there are several untraceable poisons. I can't name them off the top of my head right now, but we did go over them in forensics, and I'm aware that there are certain kinds of poisons that are untraceable. Sure. Especially to 1892 technology. So, it is now April 5th. And the mayor is sent to... So, back then, every kind of, like, city government was kind of just all jumbled together. Like, their, you know, police department, coroner, mayor, like, everything was just kind of jumbled together and everyone did a little bit of everything. Mm. So, the mayor was going to make an arrest. Strange saying, but he was going there to tell Lizzie that she was the prime suspect in the murder. So, they show up to her house... And Lizzie is tearing and burning up a dress. And they're like, oh, mate, what you doing there? And she's like, it's got a little bit of paint on it. I can't get it out, so I'm just going to burn it. And she's just burning a dress. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's fine.
Can I say it? Bitches be bonkers.
There it is. That's it. So, it's absolutely insane. So, Lizzie, get this. Lizzie ends up going on trial, right? They realize she is the most viable, probable, prime suspect that they've got. Mm-hmm. And they put her on the stand, and the jury ends up deciding, no, she didn't do it. Why do you think she didn't do it? After all this evidence, why do you think they said no?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
I mean, honestly...
Do you want me to tell you?
Yeah.
They looked at her, they're like, she's a woman... And she teaches Bible study. There's no way she was capable.
No. There's whole ass cults literally revolved around the Bible.
So.
Mass genocide!
They looked at Lizzie and they were like.
Imagine living that naively.
I know.
Actually, exactly. That is me. Like,
they looked at her and they're like, she's a woman and she teaches Bible study. She's not capable. No, doesn't have
y'all I don't have the facilities for that, big man.
None of the mental capacity, mate. None of the mental capacity. Brooke just honked her horn. Sorry.
God, my mom's asleep.
Uh-oh.
God, they won't be my ass.
All right, back again after Brooke disturbed her whole family sleeping. This episode is
quite the ride.
Quite the ride. Thank you guys for being here and staying this long because, wow.
Yes, we're about to be done, I promise.
After two breakdowns, this is insane. Two freakouts, wow. Okay, so yes, Lizzie's trial happened. But she was acquitted because she was a woman and she was a Sunday school teacher.
Imagine having boobs and it being a good thing. Having boobs saved your life.
Literally did. Like, she didn't go to prison.
The first time I said it was sarcasm. I love having boobs. But like... Anyways, continue.
Okay, so now we're going to get into the theories, which is, you know, the best part. So, Lizzie, duh.
1,000%.
Need I say more?
Literally forget the rest.
So let's pull it apart. You know, if for those of you who want me to talk about the theory just a little bit more, let's elucidate.
Why are you so antsy?
They can't see that, but yes, I am. Let's elucidate on the fact that she would be a prime suspect.
Okay.
So you have all these things. Her father, you know, killing her pigeons. Her father... You know, being married to Abby, I'm sure there was some resentment there, right? Her, you know...
Father not, giving the houses.
Yeah, not getting any real estate, not being thought of first. You know, having to be at home, not feeling like a spinster and an old maid because you're 32 living at your father's house. I'm sure there was some anger there.
I feel
there.
Like she's just bitter.
Yeah, I feel like that overall, you're right. There's just some bitterness there. So, in that theory, Lizzie... could have potentially after, you know, so there's also this. She just goes ahead and is just like, I literally hate Abby. Kills Abby. And then her father comes home immediately after that happens and sees bloodied clothes, axe handle in hand, and is like, what did you do? And she's like, I killed her, and I'll, oh gosh, I have to kill you too, kind of thing, because you saw, and I, you know, maybe that's the circumstance. Mm-hmm. So, there's that theory. Mm-hmm. Now there's Lizzie and Emma. Lizzie and Emma, you know, plotting together to have done this because of father's real estate. Hating their father, hating... Now, this is literally just the Lizzie theory plus Emma for all the same reasons. Because at this point, Lizzie is... Or not Lizzie, Emma is in her 40s. Mm-hmm. So she's well into her 40s.
She's bitter, too.
Yeah.
Old Spencer, I also think that very well... I didn't even say anything, and then I said very well. That it's very likely for Andrew to have seen Abby and have been, like, they, like, somehow, I don't know. How do I want to word this? Basically, I feel like they could have, Andrew could have seen Abby, or at least, like, heard Abby, or something along those lines. And so they put his body on the couch. Like, they staged his body after they axed him a couple times.
Well, no, so he was, like, according to police reports, he was actually killed on the couch.
But also the police reports also...
Well, the blood, so, like, blood splatter, all that stuff. Oh, no, right. Blood splatter, so, like, all the stuff around the couch.
Okay.
It would...
Exit that out, that's stupid.
He was killed on the sofa. Well, valid, I didn't really explain that.
Yeah.
So, yes. So then the next theory is John. You've got, like I said, poison showing up out of nowhere. You've got, possible poison. You know, the idea that they were being poisoned. That doesn't just pop into someone's head, you know? Mm-hmm. Like that's such, like, a drastic thought to think, you know? Like,
yeah.
Oh, gosh, my entire family's being poisoned is, like, a horrible thought to just have without... You know,
without probable
cause.
Yes.
Exactly. So, word. Yeah, that was the phrase. So, for them to think that they were being poisoned speaks volumes to me. Mm-hmm. And the fact that John showed up there right as they were, you know, right before they were starting to feel that, the fact that they did not find any poison in their bodies means nothing to me. That literally means nothing to me. There are definitely poisons that show no trace in the human body once they are, you know, decomposing. Yeah. Like, that is a thing. Mm-hmm. So, it is a possibility that John had been poisoning the family because he was frustrated with Andrew for giving his family, his wife's family, real estate and not his sister's family, you know?
But also...
John's sister and then, you know what I'm saying.
But I feel like if... that was the reason, I don't feel like John would kill his sister's kids, too. I mean, no, not kill, but poison, or quote-unquote poison.
Well, I don't think you get to pick. You just put it in all the food. You put it in the milk that everyone uses. So, in the end, he did end up poisoning everyone.
But he still had to ax them.
Yes. But then...
Popo.
We might be getting looked at by the cops. Never mind, we're fine. Oh, man. This is an exciting evening, ladies and gentlemen. He might have poisoned everyone, and then in the end just axed the other two.
Yeah.
You know?
Sloppy, but I guess go off.
Another idea. This is out there. Some people think that Uncle John and Bridget the maid were having an affair.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yes.
Ooh la la.
So, some people think that, you know, Lizzie actually is telling the truth. And, like, how they think that, I don't know.
Yeah.
But they believe that John and Bridget were having an affair and, you know, Abby found out or something. And they ended up killing Abby. And, you know, they can't be together if they find out about that. That's super weird. She's an Irish maid. She's an immigrant. Like, that's not a thing. And then he's an uncle and... You know, just the whole situation is strange, and Abby found out, and oh no, we had to kill her, and then, you know, Andrew found out respectively, and then oh no, we have to kill him. That's an idea.
Yeah.
So.
Not super convincing.
Last one however. that I was digging and found some research that I think is interesting. Lizzie and Bridget.
I I like it.
Thinking that they were having an affair themselves.
Wait,
like, Lizzie and Bridget were in a relationship. And
that would explain why she didn't move out of the house.
Bro! So Lizzie and Bridget were in a intimate relationship. And Abby walked in on them one morning, that morning. Saw them together. And Lizzie's like, well, now you have to die. And ended up killing her. And then, you know, all over her dress is blood. Andrew ends up seeing it. And she explains to him, me and Bridget are involved in a relationship. And in 1892, that's not okay. And, you know, that happens. And then they killed the dad. And, you know, that would explain why she, you know, goes and finds the dad, but also goes and finds the mom. Bridget does.
I think it would make more sense for them to just commonly just, like, I mean, I don't know about the relationship. Like, yeah, like, that's, like, ooh, interesting. But I think there's not really any evidence for the relationship.
No, there's not. It's just an interesting theory.
I think the theory of Lizzie and Bridget is very, like, possible. Like, I think it could have been
without a intimate relationship.
Yeah.
Them just doing
like, it. Like, them just doing it because of other motives. Like, them not liking... Maybe the maid didn't like Abby. Maybe she was like, like, I don't like her. She came in, thought she was the ish, like, type stuff. And, like, I don't like her. And Lizzie was like, oh my gosh, same. And then...
they bonded over that.
Yeah, and they I mean, I'm sure, like, the maid had loyalty... or, I don't want to call her the maid. Bridget. I'm sure Bridget had somewhat of loyalty to the dad, but, like... you gotta do what you gotta do, man.
Yeah.
And they could take over that house. They could take over the real estate.
That makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah.
I think of that.
I am of the camp that Lizzie was definitely involved.
Oh, 1,000%.
Whether or not other people were involved, hey, it might have even been Lizzie, Emma, and Bridget. And
John.
Throwing John in there just for kicks. Why not? They all came together and they're like, you hate him too? It's kind of like just like if they look across the room, see another giving one of them a dirty look, and they're like... oh my gosh. Wait, you hate them too?
Let's whack them!
You hate them too? Do you hate them too? Oh my gosh, yes. I've hated them for years.
Bro, you know what we should do? You know what we should do?
And then they do it. All four of them together. Why not?
And honestly, I don't condone killing, but like, go for it. Go for it. But I'm talking to Lizzie, Bridget, and all them. Like, go for it.
They did it. Some of them, one of them, many of them, all of them, who knows?
Yeah.
I am of the belief that Lizzie for sure was involved.
I'm gonna go with Lizzie and Bridget.
Ooh. Woo. I don't know. I'm gonna say Lizzie for sure. That's my end all be all. Lizzie was definitely involved. But could all four of them been involved and done it together?
1,000%.
Could it have just been Lizzie and Emma? 1,000%. Could it have just been Lizzie and Bridget? 1,000%.
The list goes on.
Lizzie and John. I don't know about that one. That feels a little.
That one feels a little.
Yeah.
Off.
See, I don't subscribe to that camp. But
I like it.
You know.
I like it.
So.
But yeah.
Lizzie did it.
Period.
All right, so that is the Lizzie Borden case. Lizzie Borden, bored in the house, and I'm in the house bored with an axe.
It is really good that we didn't do mine because
we are at an hour and 3 minutes so far. So yeah, I just got a lot more time to talk.
Yeah,
I could have done that in like maybe. I really couldn't have.
Yeah, I was about to say.
So we wanted to thank you for listening very, very much.
Yes.
We just made a social media. We made our first one. It's on Instagram. It's at The Crime Light, at THECRIMELIGHT. All together.
Like, I literally was like, what is she spelling?
The Crime Light on Instagram. It is just that. No pauses, no breaks, no underscores, no periods, nothing. It's just all one thing. So go ahead and be sure to follow that. And I was on our Anchor app. Shout out to Anchor, by the way. Thank you for being an amazing app.
Yes!
They sponsored this video. This recording. I watched too much YouTube. This podcast. Jeez. Anyways. We were looking at... They have this thing on their app where you can see the analytics of people who listen to your podcast, like how many plays you've got. And one of the coolest features to me was where people are listening. So like 53% of our podcast is the United States, obviously, you know. Mm-hmm. But we have like a ton of listeners in the UK and in Ireland and in Sweden. So if you are from one of those places, thank you guys so much for listening.
Like, DM us on Instagram.
Like, this is so cool. Like,
and critique our accents. Actually, don't.
Actually, don't. I will be really sad. And we know we're stupid Americans doing doing really bad accents. So we just want to say thank you for listening. It's so cool to me that we have viewers or listeners from around the world.
Literally, Ashton texted me the other day after we did one of our podcasts and was like, oh my gosh, we have listeners in the UK. I was like, chick, we got listeners in Ireland. Like, you stuck on Sweden? I'm stuck on Ireland and Sweden. But so shout out to you for being foreign.
Thank you. Thank you for tuning into the Crime Light and listening to us and listening to us do our rambles and
our terrible accents.
So yeah, thank you guys so much. We appreciate your continued support and all the love that you guys give us on social media. We see you. We love you. We are so appreciative, so thankful and grateful. So yeah, keep on shining.